my position in particular is charged broadly with coming in, addressing a number of the circumstances embedded within the Ivory Report, which, broadly speaking, have to do with creating a more inclusive workplace environment where people are able to come in to work, feel that they are valued, included, and part of a team. The Diversity and Inclusion Officer also has within my range of responsibility the recruitment function as well as the employee relations function, which are not typically structured under most D&I offices. And I find this uniquely satisfying from the standpoint that most diversity and inclusion, whether it's private industry or otherwise, are more put in a consultative role in order to affect change and participation and inclusiveness. Within my role, having the recruitment and employee relations functions reporting to me, I'm able to provide direct leadership and guidance to the recruitment and hiring processes and practices and results, as well as looking at the employee relations processes, practices, and results as it affects our employees statewide.
Okay, so you're on the ground level day-to-day working with executive branch people who are hiring, and you are directly involved with employee relations and recruitment. Let's talk a little bit about that Ivy report you mentioned. What exactly did that find as far as an evaluation of the culture in some of the executive branch agencies?
Broadly speaking, the Ivy report found that, and I have to speak in broad terms because there are a lot of moving parts to it, but for the most part found that while there was fair, reasonable representation across race and gender, the report found that most of the representation was within some of the lower-level grades and classifications. So while you may have, in other words, high numbers, the numbers are stratified in the lower-level positions. So there was opportunity to look at recruitment and hiring and in a way that brings in quality people, qualified people, to fill positions as they become available. This is not a numbers game in that sense, as much as we have a turnover that's natural, and we're looking at then as we have that to make sure that we have a diverse slate of candidates as best we can with the qualifications requirements being met, and that we have a diverse panel of reviewers of those candidates to ensure that we have a fair and as equitable process of evaluating the candidates when they come into the door. The Ivy report also spoke to some of the behaviors that were found out into the in the field organizations, if I may use that term, in the agencies, and that there were some cases where people were not treated very well. People didn't feel that they were included in the fabric of the organization or the work teams or work groups, and that there was unfair behavior towards minorities. And that the Ivory Report made strong recommendations, therefore, then, that to shape up some of the HR practices, that it would be wise for the state to combine HR into one unit, because previously all the HR personnel and professionals reported right up to their agency lead, the secretary, even though they were working under the umbrella of Office of Management and Budget. And therein lies part of the dynamic is that the Office of Management and Budget is primarily focused on management and budget. And the HR issues were left to the professionals to work through for themselves and working with their agency leads as their direct partners.
It is problematic that minorities are not representative in the higher positions within state agencies. What needs to change in the hiring process to advance different sexes and minorities further in the workplace without advancing people based solely off of their sex or race?
Well, it's a good question. And I started this job in December, and I'm still uncovering what the moving parts look like when you ask the question, what needs to change in the recruitment process? So we're bringing in, and I'm specifically bringing in my past experience in terms of looking at lean process improvement approaches to evaluating the organization and its moving parts and looking at where are there gaps in the and the process flow or the steps that are taking or the practices that we have had in the past, and how do we begin to look at ways and means to close those gaps. So that is a daunting task, and it's an ongoing task, but it has begun. And I'm meeting with the agency HR people, mapping their recruitment process individually because each one is different. Each one, again, as I said before, is handled differently from an HR professional standpoint. So I'm meeting them where they are, number one, mapping where they are, number one. And then number two, based on that mapping, looking jointly looking at where are gaps and opportunities for us to improve and tighten up. Some of that involves looking at how we're sourcing candidates, where we're sourcing them, how we're promoting the jobs that we have. In some cases, our jobs are placed on our Dell board, and that may be more of a passive process, meaning that a citizen would have to come looking for the job and then hope to find a place on that board that meets their career aspirations. What we're looking at now then is how do we begin to more assertively reach out to disparate communities of people and pipeline people and attract them to come work for the government. So some of those things we're putting into strategies and tactics in terms of how do we do more outreach to create the pipeline to attract minorities and women into state government work.
When you say gaps and opportunities, what could that mean specifically?
So, for example, when I talk about gaps and opportunities, what I'm saying is there, for example, we have a circumstance where we are posting jobs on our job board, and we are then therefore passively waiting for people to apply for the jobs. And so the gap is just the fact that we're posting it and passively waiting, as opposed to putting together a assertive, planned recruitment strategy that is reaching out to different target audiences and target populations, networking with and professional organizations where we may find qualified people to promote the state of Delaware as a viable place to pursue their career, and then began to make those people directly aware that we have opportunities here to have them directly then go and apply online, and therefore we are more directly and aggressively pursuing pipelining talent to come to work for the state of Delaware as opposed to passively waiting. So that's just a small example, but those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. And while some, you know, your listeners may think, well, you know, that seems obvious, the obvious is not always that obvious, if I may use that phrase, and that there are practices that have prevailed for a number of years, have gotten people to be comfortable and satisfied with that, and now bring a new set of eyes and a new way of looking at how we process through things, and then collaborating with people on taking that look and snapshot, we're able to jointly evaluate that, hey, yeah, there are some opportunities for us to change some things, and how do we begin to think about putting together concrete plans and approaches to making those changes happen.
Is there any kind of timeline as to when we might see a rollout of new recruitment policies in the executive branch?
The big answer to that is yes, meaning that we are expecting to pull together a recruitment strategy after we've done the series of mappings. The timeline is a little loose because we're still meeting with agencies, doing the mapping, and it's a detailed process. So based on schedules and timelines, we're expecting somewhere between the May and June timeframe that we would be able to say that we have an evaluation of what at least low-hanging fruit tactic strategies may work across the board and or which ones we may work in a specific area to help bring the processes up a notch.